the trademark, when I remember, the white shoes, the buck shoes, how did that happen? Did you develop it, or did some promoter say, hey, here's a great gimmick?
No. Nothing about my career has ever been premeditated or planned. The white bucks I was wearing because every high school and college kid in America was wearing them. I mean, it was the shoe worn on every campus and every high school hallway. And it was the only decent pair of shoes I had. I was in school at North Texas State and married and expecting our first kid. And so when I went on television the first few times, all I did was take a dust bag of white powder and just smack that on the shoes to whiten them up a little, and went on with the really, they went with anything. They were white with red soles. And what we didn't anticipate was that every kid in America, teenage and college age, say, hey, there's one of us.
That's right.
I mean, that's what they were wearing. Elvis also wore some scuffed up white bucks when he went on Tommy Dorsey's stage show, the first television appearance, and I think on Ed Sullivan, but somehow people never noticed his feet.
I was about 11 or 12 when I went out and got mine because
were
of you? Yeah, absolutely.
And I've been so tickled. People like J.J., Jimmy Walker, you know, J.J. on Good Times, told me that when he was growing up in Harlem that he wanted white buck shoes. And so did Dee Snider of Twisted Sister, and so did John Davidson, so did Engelbert Humperdinck in England. The white shoes became a big thing for quite a while. And thank goodness the Bass Shoe Company in Maine, they're now owned by Van Heusen. It's a big conglomerate now, but they still make the white buck shoes, as well as Bass Weegans and others. And they now have a Pat Boone model, and they did for years. And we devoted all the proceeds from the endorsements of the white bucks and a few other things to trust funds for my daughters' college education and weddings, because we still have that medieval dark ages custom that the father of the bride has to pay for everything.
That's right.
And I did it four times, and my white bucks turned into green bucks, thank God.
We're going to talk about your movie career in a moment, but you know, you've been in Hollywood, you've been out here in L.A. for a long time. How come you never got tainted? I mean, I look at some of the careers of so many great musicians, and they all had their problems.
Yeah.
I mean, we yesterday had a full hour devoted to the anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley.
Died at 40, and he was a good friend of mine. Yeah.
How come Pat Boone never got tainted by Hollywood?
Well, my wife would want me always quickly to offer the proviso. I have not been a saint. I mean, I've kept my nose pretty clean, and I wanted to, and I felt it was important. And the fact that I was married before my career began, really, and that I loved my wife, and we had four kids by the time I graduated from college, and that was a very serious responsibility. Plus, I grew up in a church in Nashville, my dad a building contractor, mama a registered nurse, but very practical professions. But we were at the church every time the doors opened, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday, anytime a revival meeting. So it was ingrained in me growing up. So when we moved to Manhattan, we had a little church on 48 East 80th up in Manhattan, and I was there again every time the church doors opened. Mm-hmm. When we moved to California, we were out in Inglewood at the church there the same way with the family. So being married, serious about that, involved in church, having a lot of friends from church, really more friends in our church circles than I did in the entertainment business. Although I met and, you know, came to love a lot of people in my business, I just happened to spend more time with family and church folks and people that weren't really in the entertainment business. So I wasn't caught up in all the glamour and all the stuff that's made available to entertainers. Not that I wasn't aware of it, not that it wasn't offered from time to time, but it just didn't have the appeal to me.
Well, let me tell you, your career has been just stellar, and never a day goes by where I don't glance at or look at one of my favorite movies of all time, Journey to the Center of the Earth. I love that movie.
Yeah, it's really a wonderful film, and I didn't want to do it. I had to be talked into doing it.
You didn't want to do it?
No, I was a Bing Crosby fan, and I saw myself, if I had a career in movies, as a second Bing Crosby. Uh-huh. I really tried to emulate him, not imitate, but emulate him. And people told me at times that that I did remind them of Bing, which of course was the greatest compliment they could pay me. So I saw myself making musicals. Now, 20th, I was under contract there. They said, no, we want you to do this Jules Verne thing. I said, well, that's not what I do. I do music. Well, we'll put some songs in. And they did.
Yeah.
And they kept wheedling and talking to my agents and my manager. And finally, George, as a final inducement, they gave me a big percentage of the gross of the film after they recouped their costs, which, of course, with many films was a joke because the way they kept books, you would never recoup.
Yeah.
But in this case, the film was such a success. This was what I wanted to tell you about it. It came out right when 20th was going under. They were about to go bankrupt uh-huh. because they were doing Cleopatra.
Oh, yes.
With Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton.
And
it was going hugely over budget. The banks were about to foreclose. And this was, I didn't know it at the time, but an executive at 20th told me later, said, you saved us from bankruptcy. There would be no 20th Century Fox if Journey of the Center of the Earth hadn't come out and began to rack up big grosses immediately. It convinced the bankers to ride with us a little longer until we got Cleopatra finished and out, and we got back on our feet. But if it hadn't been for that film, we would have been bankrupt.